thank you so much for this interesting presentation. I'm almost sorry that I had to interrupt you guys, especially the presentation by Jeff. Anyway, in my short 20 minutes, I would like to discuss with you briefly the issues of food safety. So let's just jump in right away without any delays. What I would like to start is just with a few brief statistics. Then I would like to talk about issues like viruses, bacteria, parasites, prions, food additives, herbicides, pesticides, and genetically modified foods. Each of those can give up a lecture. So you can really realize that what I'm doing is I'm hardly scratching the surface. Now, food safety, you would think that we live in the 21st century and food safety is a no issue, okay? Nobody dies today because of food safety. Well, you are wrong. I mean, I have the statistics for United States, but in other countries it is similar. In the developing countries it's maybe even worse. Even in United States, which is a very, very, very safe food supply, every year 325,000 people are hospitalized because of some kind of food poisoning, and actually 5,200 die. So imagine that even a country which is such safe food supply, you have such high numbers. Now, I will start with stuff which you probably remember all from school and which is really just a repetition. So obviously there are foodborne illnesses, and they start with viruses, which you all know that they actually require you to, as a living being, that they can actually grow and be promoted. The most common actually foodborne disease is novavirus infection, and we have probably all experienced it, that you went to cafeteria and afterwards you had a diarrhea, so you just had an episode of a novavirus, or diseases like hepatitis A and so on. Then the second huge area are bacteria. Now, God made us in such a wonderful way that everything we eat comes into the stomach, and obviously in the stomach it meets a very highly acidic environment which should kill everything. Unfortunately, sometimes what happens is that not everything is killed, and what actually comes into the small intestine starts to flourish, and so I can imagine that any bacteria who actually survives stomach must come or must think that it came to heaven, because suddenly the temperature is pleasantly 37 degrees, there is a lot of wet environment, so the bacteria can multiply like crazy and cause some kind of diarrheal disease. Now, some bacteria are, however, also healthy bacteria. Like, for example, you probably all know that there is vitamin K, which is made in our large intestine, or biotin. Or we are in France, or close to France, and if you go to the store, you see that there is all kinds of cheeses, and sometimes you see that the cheeses are covered with some kind of bacterial cultures, which are actually cultivated so that you can actually eat them. The third biggest group are parasites, and sometimes when we eat, actually we eat with the food parasites, if they do survive the acidic environment of stomach, they can actually then be host in your small intestine or other organs of your body. Now, how to fight this? It's basically the four C's. Easy to remember: clean, wash hands, wash surfaces, wash vegetables, wash everything which comes in contact or which you are planning to put into your mouth. The second one is cross-contamination. They have it here as an S, but remember it's a C, cross-contamination. So do not cross-contaminate foods, and I'm going to talk about it in a second. Then, of course, chill or cook. Because, as I'm going to show you here, we all know that there is so-called the danger zone. And so every time the bacteria is allowed to be in the danger zone between 40 degrees Fahrenheit and 140, or if you're in a metric system, between 4 degrees centigrade and 60 degrees centigrade, this is the time when the bacteria actually multiplies. Therefore, all the food should be either chilled or should be cooked, and in this way you are eliminating actually the production. Now, this is the stuff what I was talking about, cross-contamination, and this is sometimes quite heavily violated, especially in the households, not in the kitchens, because they are trained to not to do it. Like things, like for example, you should separate raw meat from other produce in the refrigerator. You should sanitize the sponges by which you actually clean the cupboard. you should make sure that you wash utensils and countertops and, you know, cutting boards, especially if you have a wooden cutting board, which you have been using for a long time. Sometimes the bacteria gets into the cuts and you can actually not get it out anymore. So this is something which should be thrown out. Actually, I think it is much safer and much better to have this plastic cut boards that you can actually buy in IKEA, for example. Then you have to remember that, like, for example, dirty towels, if you touch something which came in contact with meat, now it's dirty. So if you use it for something else, now you're spreading the bacteria around. If you marinate something, make sure that the marination is going on in a closed container so that, again, there is no cross-contamination to other areas in your fridge. There are many ways what we can do to protect us besides washing our hands, looking for not cross-contaminate, and chilling and cooking. Now, what the manufacturers do is they use preservation techniques to destroy the contaminants. So the least aggressive is pasteurization, which is basically heating liquids at, or food at high enough temperature to destroy foodborne pathogens, but keep the product fresh and longer. So, for example, food which is or milk which is pasteurized has not changed the taste. You can clearly differentiate, for example, between milk which was sterilized and milk which was pasteurized, because the sterilization process changes or alters the taste. And this is true for everything. So pasteurization goes only up to the temperature which destroys the pathogens but do not destroy the taste. And you can pasteurize almost anything, milk, dairy products, juices. Lately I have read in California they are pasteurizing almonds. So you cannot eat raw almonds anymore. Another area or another process is sterilization or canning, which is basically heating up to food to very high temperatures. Now, there is important to know that there is one bacterium called Clostridium botulinum, which causes a disease called botulinism. And actually, if you do not heat the food to a really high enough temperature, and you pack it in the anaerobic environment, actually this can then multiply and you can actually get very, very sick from it. You might even die. However, the good news is that this usually comes from home canning, not from manufacturally processed canning. Then there are some really modern techniques, like, for example, modified atmosphere packing, which means that what they do is they use it, for example, with fruit and vegetables, that they suck out oxygen, and because there is no oxygen, obviously bacteria cannot multiply. There is high pressure processing, which means that they send like pulses of heat over a certain food product, and it destroys the microorganism. There are things which are highly controversial, like some foods, for example, can be irradiated. And this is used like for powders or for things which are very difficult to heat. The good news is that if anything which is irradiated, now first of all, you have to remember, if something is irradiated, it does not become radioactive. Like this is the same when you have a chest x-ray, you are not radioactive after the chest x-ray, but some people still don't like the idea of eating irradiated food, and therefore all everything which is what's irradiated has to bear this international Radura symbol that you know that the food was irradiated. Another huge area besides microbes and parasites and viruses is, unfortunately, we live in a dangerous world, and there is other dangerous microorganisms like prions. Now, we do have prions in our brain, which are actually, we do not have, they may have some neurological functioning, we do not know yet what is it, but these are not the bad prions, these are the abnormal prions called PRPSC, stands for scrapie, which actually can cause a disease in humans. It is called the new variant of Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. In cows, it is called the mad cow disease, or kuru, or other neural diseases. Now, this is a normal prion, and this is a scrapy prion, and you can see that the only difference is that actually the three-dimensional structure has changed, but the consequences are severe. Again, I'm just showing you pieces of it. This is a histological piece of a brain from a sheep, from a human, from a cow, and from a human. And you can now see, or you can understand why... you can now understand why all those diseases are called spongiform encephalopathies, because what they do is they literally drill holes into your brain. So what happens is once you get the disease, there is literally parts of brain missing. If a human gets this kind of disease, the symptoms are, or they start with dementia, psychosis, and they basically end with death. And this would be, for example, the case of New Creutzfeldt disease. Now, in the animals, we have the scrapie, the mad cow disease, or the chronic wasting disease. If you look at the distribution of mad cow disease in UK, of course, the disease was peaking in 1992, but it is still surprising that so many years after they have really did the strict ban on cannibalistic feeding, which means that they do not put into the feed any of the meat meal, you can see that there is still some mad cow disease remaining in United Kingdom. Now, if you look at the worldwide distribution of mad cow disease and then the variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, you see it's probably not a very frequent disease, but it basically does show that the transmission from animal to human is possible. Now, another huge area of food safety is food additives. These are all the E's, which you can see, which you can read on the label. And now, the funny thing with the food additives is that actually those who are added directly, purposely to food, there is like 2,800 of them, but those who are incidental, which means that they're like simply added by contamination, like pesticide residues and so on, is like 10,000 of them, much more than actually what is purposely put into food. Now, I would just like to show you briefly or tell you briefly how additives are actually tested, because I think people are sometimes quite confused and they think that something which was not which is dangerous can be put into food supply. Now, what they do is they have to test the new chemical on two species. So, for example, they take a hamster and maybe a chimpanzee or a monkey. And then what they do is they give them, they increase the dose till they come to a dose which they can observe some kind of negative effects. Then what they do is they compute out of this what would be the dose for a human, and then they divide this dose by 100. And the reason why by 100 is because humans are 10 times more sensitive and individuals can be 10 times more sensitive between each other. And so with the small number which they get, which is 100,000 less where it was observable, actually this is what is then allowed to be put into food. So if you freak out on some kind of E number, remember that you would have to eat huge quantities of junk food or whatever contains the E ingredients to actually come even to the observable dose. Another area of food safety is of great concern is the toxins and chemicals which actually end up in food supply, and these are the pesticides and herbicides. Now, of course, they are used widely in agriculture to, you know, control insects, weeds, microorganisms, rodents. Now, I know that especially in Europe, the bioagriculture and the biopesticides are in much great, I would say, favor than in the United States. And usually what this means is that they are typically less toxic. And sometimes what they try to do is they try to, for example, use different species to control, for example, in agriculture for pests and so on. Now, what I would like to show you is just that if you are concerned about pesticides, what you can do is, first of all, wash everything thoroughly. So if you have like vegetables, make sure that you are washing them and scrubbing them. Most of the pesticide residues would be on the outer part of the vegetable. If you are really, really paranoid and you would really like to remove even more, then you can actually peel everything. And if you peel everything, then you are actually almost down to nothing. So by washing, you are removing roughly about 80 to 90%. By peeling it, you are removing maybe the remaining 8-9%, so you are really getting almost no exposure to pesticides. And then this last thing which is good is to eat a variety of food, okay? So, for example, even something so simple like if you go to a market, don't buy always from the same vendor because maybe he is using too much of a pesticide, but if you use different vendors, then you are getting a variety and you will be probably not exposed so much to this. The last thing is, of course, you can go organic. Or in Europe they call it bio, and this basically means that you are not using any kind of synthetic pesticides. However, let me just do one word of caution, and this means that this might not, if you buy something organic, this does not mean that it is really free of pesticides. This simply means sometimes that they are using biopesticides or they are using other measures how to control the pests, but it is not possible to do agriculture without any kind of fertilizing, okay? I mean, this is illusion. We have just heard that this is a science to have a good fertile soil. The last point about food safety is biotechnology. Again, very controversial, totally different view between European Union and United States. What this means is basically that it is a genetic engineering or what this means basically is that the genetic code inside the plant is manipulated. In the past, what we did, we had something what was called plant breeding. Now we can actually, because we do understand the DNA code, we can do it. Some of the things which they do are, I would say, harmless. Like, for example, there is an enzyme in a potato which causes the potato to be soft. So what they have done is they have cut out the DNA sequence and switched it. So which means that as the potato now sits on the shelf and on day 8, the enzyme should start to be produced. The sequence starts and comes to a mistake. So the enzyme is not produced, the tomato is not soft. But sometimes they do things which even I would say I hold for questionable. Like for example, they take genes from animals and put them into plants to enhance all kinds of capabilities, things like, for example, they can be resistant to pests like BT corn, or maybe you haven't heard about Roundup soya, which is a soya bean which is actually resistant to the herbicide Roundup. Everything is killed, just soya bean stays. Or sometimes the nutritional value is increased, like maybe you guys have heard about the golden rice, which actually is a rice which was in, which is now, it says, a gene which produces beta carotene and iron, and so on and so on. The great concern here is also that we do not know what these genetically modified foods will actually do in the free nature. So there is a vast difference how this is approached in, as I said already, in Europe and in United States. In United States, actually, FDA must approve all the genetically modified products, but they are not required to be labeled, which means that the population in the U.S. is actually much more exposed to the genetically modified foods. In the U.S., in the Europe, Japan, Australia, and New Zealand, actually, the genetically modified foods required clear labeling, and because usually the population is against it, so they actually don't eat it, and therefore they don't make business with it. That's it. Thank you for your attention.